Think about the last time you watched a couple argue in public. Maybe you caught yourself thinking, why don't they just talk about it? Here's the uncomfortable truth. Nearly half of all people avoid bringing up relationship problems, convinced that silence is safer than conflict. We've somehow convinced ourselves that love should be effortless, that the right person will magically understand our needs, and that happy couples never fight. But what if everything we believe about relationship strength is backwards? What if the couples who seem effortlessly happy are actually the ones doing the hardest work, just in ways we can't see? Real relationship resilience isn't about finding someone who never frustrates you. It's about building mental strength together, learning to navigate the messy, uncomfortable moments that every partnership inevitably faces. Angela spent 30 years in a marriage that looked fine from the outside. She and Carl functioned like a well-oiled machine. He earned money, she managed the home, their son's activities filled the silence. Then the boys moved out, and suddenly, Angela couldn't ignore what she'd been avoiding. They had nothing to say to each other. The loneliness was crushing, made worse by the fact that her husband sat just one room away. We tell ourselves we're keeping the peace by staying quiet, rationalizing that bringing up problems will only make things worse. Sometimes we're both struggling with the same issue, like drinking too much or spending beyond our means. But addressing one person's problem means confronting our own. So we wait, hoping things will magically improve, arguing about dirty dishes when we're really upset about feeling disrespected. Angela didn't confront Carl with ultimatums. She started small, buying theater tickets, planning hiking trips. During those hikes, away from the television and separate rooms, they began talking again. Real conversations, not just logistics. By addressing the problem through action rather than avoidance, she transformed an adequate marriage into something fulfilling. When Autumn discovered David's OnlyFans subscription to his ex-girlfriend, his first instinct was to minimize it. But secrets sit in your chest like stones, growing heavier with each avoided conversation. Most adults keep around 13 secrets at any given time, hiding things to protect themselves from embarrassment, to shield partners from hurt, to avoid conflict. David and Autumn's healing required transparency. He shared his passwords because openness was the only path back to trust. They had explicit conversations about boundaries, what counts as betrayal, what contact with exes feels comfortable, what content crosses a line. Secrets often indicate deeper relationship problems. We hide things when we already feel disconnected. When David finally stopped minimizing and started taking responsibility, they could move forward together. Jen believed she deserved her husband's criticism. After all, she was the one with debt, the one who'd made financial mistakes. So when Ethan made jokes about her debt at dinner parties, leaving her embarrassed and small, she stayed silent. The idea of telling her husband his behavior was unacceptable felt impossible. Boundaries aren't walls. They're guidelines for how we want to be treated. They protect our peace while allowing intimacy, covering money, time, physical affection, emotional support, and privacy. Many struggle with boundaries because we fear being seen as difficult. Jen's breakthrough came in therapy when she told Ethan his public comments hurt her. They agreed to treat their debt as shared, develop neutral responses for social situations, and schedule weekly money meetings. With these boundaries in place, Jen felt like they were finally on the same team. Being in a committed relationship doesn't erase your right to respect. Boundaries aren't about controlling your partner. They're about taking responsibility for your own well-being while building a relationship where both people can thrive. Kevin arrives late to his daughter's soccer game, expecting appreciation, but Leah criticizes his tardiness. He explodes, listing sacrifices, attending events despite work pressure, weekend paperwork, financial provision. Their arguments become competitions over who suffers more. Nearly half of people feel resentful about what they do for relationships. Martyrs insist they suffer most and refuse help even when offered, keeping score and building cases for why they deserve more gratitude. Kevin rejected Leah's offers to help with bookkeeping because accepting assistance felt like admitting failure. Martyrs confuse healthy sacrifice with overdoing it, poisoning relationships with resentment.
Breaking the pattern requires vulnerability. Kevin made specific requests. Can you help with bookkeeping so we have more evening time together? When you approach sacrifice as a choice rather than obligation and accept help as partnership rather than defeat, resentment dissolves. Jillian walked on eggshells around Marcel's moods. When she suggested visiting family, he'd claim the trip would trigger his anxiety. When discussing responsibilities, he'd shut down with, "You know I hate conflict." His emotions dictated their entire lives. Emotional weaponry takes many forms: sulking until you get your way, exploding in anger to end conversations, claiming tasks are too hard, feigning helplessness to avoid accountability. Jillian's breakthrough came when she noticed Marcel managed emotions perfectly fine at work and with his family. He wasn't incapable, he was choosing not to with her. She set boundaries, time limits when he disappeared during events, attending family gatherings regardless of his participation, letting him handle his own appointments. Marcel initially resisted, but over months, he began taking genuine responsibility. Once his manipulation stopped working, he discovered he could actually manage his feelings and felt better about himself too.
60-year-old Janice wanted help talking sense into her husband Ken about his drinking. Despite having diabetes, he'd started stopping at bars after work. She tried everything, telling him to cut back, dumping his alcohol, suggesting AA meetings. Nothing worked. Ken accused her of overreacting, and their arguments escalated. What Janice didn't realize was that she couldn't fix Ken, only change how she responded. We try to fix our partners because watching someone we love make destructive choices is agonizing. Sometimes the behaviors directly affect us. Chronic lateness disrupts our plans. Poor financial decisions threaten our security. Some people approach their partners as construction projects, always finding something needing improvement. Janice's transformation began when she stopped trying to control Ken's drinking. She greeted Ken warmly when he came home directly after work, while calmly withdrawing attention when he arrived late after drinking. This positive reinforcement worked better than years of lecturing. As their relationship improved, Janice carefully asked Ken how alcohol affected his diabetes, rather than telling him what to do. When Ken admitted to gaining weight and losing energy, Janice suggested a doctor's appointment. Lecturing triggers defensiveness, causing people to mentally argue against your points rather than consider change. When you try fixing your partner, you shift from partnership to parent-child dynamics. The fixed partner often responds like a rebellious teenager, hiding behaviors rather than changing them. Ironically, when the fixer stops trying to change their partner, the other person often begins taking responsibility, improving both themselves and the relationship. Trevor and Haley spent 6 years letting communication deteriorate into yelling and put-downs. James wanted to start a caregiving business, while Brenda feared financial ruin. Mindy and Paul fought constantly about cleanliness. These couples weren't failing because they lacked love. They'd forgotten how to be mentally strong together. Relationship strength requires active work, tracking your own disrespectful behaviors instead of your partner, allowing each other to grow even when change feels scary, regularly remembering what first attracted you. Research shows that simply looking at photos of your partner can increase satisfaction. Recalling early dates, couple-defining songs, and challenges you've overcome together rekindles passion. Couples who transform their relationships build mental strength by facing uncomfortable truths, having difficult conversations, and choosing connection over comfort. They understand that boredom, not conflict, better predicts relationship dissatisfaction. They remember that their partner is an imperfect human who will hurt them sometimes, but those hurts aren't always intentional. Assuming good intentions helps you respond with kindness instead of resentment. Mental strength in relationships isn't about never struggling. It's about how you handle struggle together. It means naming problems instead of avoiding them, choosing transparency over comfortable secrets, setting boundaries that protect both people, refusing to compete over suffering, disarming emotional weapons, accepting your partner as they are, and remembering why you fell in love.
Challenges aren't signs of failure. They're signs of being human. The question isn't whether you'll struggle, but whether you'll build the mental strength to struggle well. Your love story isn't about perfection. It's about two imperfect people choosing, again and again, to be strong together.